You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. Need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and a very happy new year, belatedly, because, well, it's, I'm getting used to the idea that it's 2025, and we got a great year in store for you. I've got a lot of great guests lined up in our podcast series. And of course, we have our weekly radio program that ultimately turns into a podcast that you can listen to when it posts on Mondays. And then there's our weekly Q&A with Layla, which I enjoy very much. And then there's Layla's own independent podcast, which usually drops on a Friday.
Yes. Yeah. Where so, I weigh in.
Lots of ways to become a better informed, intelligent medicine listener, and we'll take you on the journey towards better health and wellness in 2025. So, Layla, what's our next question?
This comes from Lisa. My husband just called me on his way home from his yearly physical with his doctor and reported that he wants him to start taking a statin. Chuck, my husband is like you, Dr. Hoffman. He's about to be 70, and he's in fantastic shape. Anyway, he's about 5'10 and a half, 163 pounds, rides and swims 3 days a week. He lifts weights. And get this, his lipid panels are beautiful. It's actually beautiful, Dr. Hoffman. Mm-hmm. Let me name some numbers. Yeah. His total cholesterol is 193. Mm-hmm. Triglycerides are 39, HDL is 80, LDL is 105. Mm-hmm. And his hemoglobin A1C is 5.3. Mm-hmm. The doctor told him that he plugs in all of his numbers, his age, and he said it was suggested that he start taking a statin.
Yeah.
What is wrong with this, doctor?
Yeah.
What say you?
Well, you know, there is a tendency now to suggest that
programmed.
Yeah, that, you know, look, he's a guy, he's 70. You know, forget his cholesterol, forget that all this good stuff that he's doing, you know, he's just an old guy and he should be on a statin. That's pretty much the default, right? And there are plugins that you can use, where you plug in your data, but unfortunately the data does not ask for your status in terms of your fitness. It doesn't ask what's your VO2 max. It doesn't ask how many minutes per week you exercise. How many push-ups and pull-ups you can do, and so on. It just asks, you know, it asks for your raw numbers. And by the way, the numbers are phenomenally good.
They are.
Because
great.
Cholesterol at 190, you want to take the ratio of the cholesterol to the HDL, and you've got a ratio
of 80.
Yeah, it was a 2 to 1. You know, it's phenomenally, at least 2 point something to 1. Which were under 4 to 1 is very favorable. And then you can also look at a cholesterol to triglyceride ratio.
39.
Which is,
you know, that Lisa's husband is not overdoing any sugar or carbohydrates.
No, no metabolic syndrome because when you have a low triglycerides. So I just don't understand it. And maybe there's a piece that's missing. I always sometimes say, like, I don't know, maybe I'm not seeing something here that the doctor has some piece of information that I am not privy to, but listen, what is in order here is something called a CAC, a coronary artery calcium score, okay? And that can be the decider, because on paper, you look great, but unfortunately, it is hard sometimes to predict whether people have coronary artery plaque simply on their lifestyle and even on their numbers. So if you have a zero score at 70, you're home free, basically. Mm-hmm. If you have a low single-digit score, you're still pretty good, but you know, you're having some age-related just smidgen of plaque. If you have a score that's 100 or greater, well, maybe there's an argument to be made that there's some advantage to a statin. If you have a number that's like 1,400, you better really hit your cholesterol and your lipid profile hard with something. I actually think that there is demonstrable evidence that that can help you. But so that's the decider, I think. The other thing that maybe I'm not seeing, or maybe hasn't been done, is let's look at an hsCRP, highly sensitive yes. C-reactive protein. Let's look at an LP little a. Those mm-hmm. things are actually very helpful for determining whether people are at risk of cardiovascular disease, because you could have a great cholesterol, but if you have a high LP little a or high hsCRP, mm-hmm. You actually may have some risk that's not apparent from just your lipid profile alone.
Yeah. And a homocysteine as well. Because a high homocysteine is also an independent risk factor.
That too, although cardiologists, you know, don't pay attention to it. And I think it's a shame.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to say. It's just disappointing when I hear my colleagues who, look, these are really bright people who had to run the gauntlet through endless science prerequisites to become doctors. And then they just rely on algorithms now to practice medicine. They're not using their brains.
Yeah.
And
they're not critically thinking anymore, which I find scary.
I think we're relegating medicine to a series of protocols that can be administered through a computer screen. And we're losing the art of medicine and the art of seeing the whole patient and thinking it through and understanding the risks and benefits of all these pharmaceuticals that we have been programmed to prescribe.
Yeah. Yeah. It is unfortunate, but that's the way medicine is going. There isn't a patient that walks into my office that does not also have the question about their cholesterol.
Wow.
They could be coming into me for a myriad of other reasons, Dr. Hoffman, but there is always this topic. Oh, and my doctor thinks I should go on a statin.
Right.
And my doctor thinks I should go on a statin. What do you think of my cholesterol numbers? What about my cholesterol?
Yep.
And it's just, it's never ending. Yeah. Yeah. So, and my favorite, Dr. Hoffman, mm-hmm. is, well, I have a coronary calcium score of 0, but my doctor still wants me to go on a statin.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, okay. So just to be fair,
yeah,
the coronary calcium score measures your calcified plaque. An argument can be made that you might have some plaque that is non-calcified, which isn't revealed by that test. It can be revealed by a CT angiogram, which is more expensive and not generally covered by insurance. We talked to the folks from Clearly, Cleerly, where yes. you can see, say, in the absence of calcium, whether there is some non-calcified plaque, which is somewhat of a risk. But I've looked at the statistics, and risk is conceivable to have a heart attack with zero plaque. But it's like yes. 1 in 100 or less. So, you know, you don't really need to address it. Now, here's one instance where, let's say you have a cholesterol of 350 and, you know, you listen to this podcast and you're 25 years old or 30 years old and you get the CAC test and it's 0. Well, it might be 0 because you haven't had time to form plaque.
Yeah.
And with an astronomical cholesterol, there is a possibility that it should be lowered because you might want to stick around for another 50 or 60 years, right?
Right.
So that's an instance where maybe that zero plaque is illusory, but I had a zero plaque score at 65, and I'm just not worried anymore. I'm not going to repeat it. And
you know, even though my cholesterol is a little high, my cholesterol, like, you know, sometimes it's 225, you know, but my HDL is like, you know, 85, and my triglycerides are similarly, you know, in the 30s, and I'm very athletic. I think this is a...
There's been enough scientific research, maybe not enough scientific research, Dr. Hoffman, that shows that even higher cholesterols, like a total cholesterol of 260, for example, people live longer on a cholesterol that's higher because it's a necessary substance. That's why our livers crank out 80% of the cholesterol that our body needs.
Right.
Because it's a necessary substance.
I just want to clarify
it's
something.
It's a catch 22.
I just want to clarify something, though. Is one of the things that foes of statins and foes of cholesterol lowering say is that the brain is made of cholesterol, and if you take a statin, you're going to become demented. And I have to say, I was very receptive to that idea originally, but I've been looking at the data on that, and the data on that suggests that with these new PCSK9, we call them pesky drugs, that are injectable, that lower cholesterol, they'll lower your cholesterol to, like, you know, your total cholesterol to like 90 or 85, and they'll lower your LDL to 30 or less. They just knock out your cholesterol. Their long-term use is not associated with dementia, okay, which is reassuring for people who lower their cholesterol with statins. Although, what's interesting, the statins, which don't lower the cholesterol as much, it's equivocal. It's not, there are some people who do better off statins cognitively because maybe they're screwing up their CoQ10 in their brain, something like the energetics or there's a mitochondrial effect. So it's not about, you know, sucking the cholesterol out of your brain and turning you demented. I would say that's less of a concern. And there's also some evidence that, you know, if you lower your cholesterol, you don't just get atherosclerosis in your heart. You also get atherosclerosis in your brain, and that leads to dementia. And so there may be some protective effects or maybe some anti-inflammatory effect of statins on the brain. And that's why I try to reassure patients who are propagandized, frankly, by the statin foes, because I think the statin foes in some ways are as bad as the statin proponents like this doctor who want everybody on a statin. The notion is that no people ever should take statins. They're poison. They're, you know, is it the line?
You should take it if you've had a heart attack.
You should take it if you have high risk. Even preventively in some instances, but for sure if you've had a heart attack.
Yeah. So I'm very worried, Dr. Hoffman, because younger and younger people are being told they should go on a statin, like, you know, when they're 35 and 40.
Well, it's a huge... uncontrolled experiment, and we're all guinea pigs.
Yeah, it appears so. Well, okay, Lisa, there's your, thank you for your question, and best of health to you and your husband, and he should keep on keeping on, and that's great with all his physical activity.
Also, I mean, I think, you know, when sometimes people take a statin, they think, oh, it's like such a big decision. It's so fraught to take a statin or take that. It's not going to make that much difference, you know, and unless you are super high risk, then you'll see a difference. But for a lot of the people taking a statin, they might, you know, there's what's called the number needed to treat, which means how many people need to take a drug to save one life or to prevent one heart attack. And for statins in people who have risk factors but have not had a heart attack, the number needed to treat is sometimes as high as like 100 or 200. In other words, like 99 people need to take it, and perhaps unnecessarily, to prevent one heart attack in one person. So that's not, you know, I would say a number needed to treat that I would be happy with is like 10. You know, if you've got a 1 in 10 chance of getting a heart attack and you take that, you know, I don't mind that 9 people take it unnecessarily to save one person. But if it's like 100, you know, 99 people have to take it for the off chance that you might save one person, well, I don't know. That's not very favorable.
It's not.
I think we have an opportunity to allow one of our sponsors to message our listeners, so listen up, here goes.
Kyolic aged garlic extract is considered by many to be the goat of garlic, the greatest garlic supplement of all time. For over 50 years, Kyolic aged garlic extract has been the trusted choice for millions for safe, effective cardiovascular and immune support. Aged garlic extract's effectiveness is well documented in over 900 published scientific papers and studies. Kyolic aged garlic extract is created by aging organically grown garlic for up to 20 months. This unique aging process makes aged garlic extract gentle on the stomach, eliminates the offensive garlic odor and taste, and results in safe, beneficial compounds found only in Kyolic aged garlic extract products. Whether you're seeking ways to maintain healthy cholesterol or blood pressure levels, or strengthen your immunity, there is a Kyolic formula right for you. Visit Kyolic.com and learn about Kyolic's many health benefits. That's KYOLIC.com. Look for Kyolic at natural health stores nationwide and online.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. Question come to questions@drhoffman.net. What's next?
Okay. We've got an email with an article here. This is from Eitan. Please bring this up to Dr. Hoffman. Please address it on your Q&A program. And it's from the Canberra Times in Australia. The heading is anti-vaccine doctor wins bid to resume medical practice.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. William Bay, who protested against COVID-19 vaccination, has had a medical ban overturned,
mm-hmm.
which is good,
yep.
which is great. Supporters clapped and cheered in court after a doctor who clashed with regulators over COVID-19 vaccines had a medical ban lifted. The original complaints, one of the complaints was that Dr. Bay had posted a social media video claiming COVID-19 vaccines has killed his patient and harmed others.
Mm-hmm.
Another complaint stated
hold on right there.
Yeah.
A social media post that suggests that the COVID-19 vaccine killed a patient. Well, guess what? There have been deaths associated with the COVID-19 vaccine. Not that many. It's not like people are dropping like flies from it. I took the first two, and, you know, knock wood, I haven't turned into a zombie yet. And I, you know, and so far so good. Although I have to say that I'm not going to take any more. And, you know, they're actually, it was announced in the Hillary Clinton campaign, in the Kamala Harris campaign, that one of the prerequisites were that people have up-to-date vaccinations. What does that mean? Like seven vaccinations? If you're like a 30-year-old staffer, you know, or a 25-year-old staffer, it, you know, it didn't make any sense anymore. So I just wanted to pause on that note. Is a social media post that says that somebody died from the vaccine, and while it might create some hesitancy on the part of people to take the vaccine, which of course they didn't want to introduce any possibility of doubting the efficacy and safety of the vaccine, but it was a truthful post. It was truthful.
Yeah. But yet the medical board found Dr. Bay's public statements undermined medical regulators' position on COVID-19and the vaccine. So all of this.
Okay,
but it was overturned, so yes. There is justice.
There's been a reckoning around this, and people who have been fired are being reinstated, sometimes with damages. There are apologies.
He's having his legal fees paid for, good. So it was ordered that the medical board cover Dr. Bay's reasonable legal costs as the regulators had extended the proceedings and made partial admissions at a late stage and all of this. Anyway.
And Australia was particularly bad when it comes to the lockdowns. There are actually videos that I saw of them. People were walking outside and they would be chased down, you know, if they literally chased down by police. For walking outside, taking a walk, and or not wearing a mask when outside, you know, there was this frenzy, especially in the Anglosphere, in the U.S. and especially in Australia, Canada, and the U.K., But I think the Australians really kind of outdid themselves in terms of overzealous implementation of the...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I would even call overzealous an understatement. I've seen many of those videos, and I can't believe that this was happening in our world. Oh, my God. Anyway.
Yeah, it really brought out the worst in us, didn't it? That whole thing.
Sad. Totally. Totally. Eitan, thank you very, very much for sending this to us. So hopefully we're going to see more stories like that. That would be very, very encouraging. Like I said, I'm very, very optimistic for 2025 during this great awakening that we're in, and a lot of truths that are coming out, and a lot of wrongs, hopefully, that will be set right. Yeah. And justice.
I mean, I just to remind people, I was at the brunt of this because when I wrote an article for my newsletter about natural support for COVID, you know, talking about some of the plausible things that in the past have been shown to be helpful, including vitamin D, including zinc, and, you know, very plausible things backed by science. I've included scientific references. I was attacked by the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission said, you need to take that down. And I pushed back on them. And the way that it got resolved is, you know, it ultimately, you know, it could have gotten into a multi-billion dollar suit. But ultimately, I agreed to post a disclaimer saying that, you know, none of these therapies have actually been shown to be helpful, have actually been conclusively shown to be helpful for COVID. Which is true. There had not been clinical trials at that point. So it was a truthful statement. But nonetheless, I wasn't even free to opine that maybe we should have, you know, utilize some of these things. And this is, I posted this before vaccines were available. Nothing was available. And before Paxlovid and Remdesivir and all these things had been made available.
Right.
So it was like, what are we supposed to do, Dr. Altman? Okay, well, you know, you can take some vitamin D, take some vitamin C, take some zinc, modest suggestions. You know, we looked at, you know, certain herbs that have immune, you know, things like HCC and things like that. It's like, oh my God, you know, no, you got to take it down. It's like, really? But, you know, I didn't end up suing them for damages because can't really sue the government. You know, it's kind of tough to get money out of the government.
Oh, not without going bankrupt yourself, Dr. Right. Hoffman. Oh my goodness.
They have all the firepower and unlimited resources to just grind you down. I mean, it's called lawfare.
That's our tax dollars at work.
It's called lawfare. Lawfare.
Lawfare.
They will just stamp out dissent.
We don't like what you said, so we're going to sue you. We're going to take you down. We're going to bankrupt you.
Yep.
Death by 1,000 cuts.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. On that
We have a question about death by 1,000 cuts. Do you know, actually, death by 1,000 cuts was, it's based on a real punishment that was a particularly gruesome form of execution that was developed in China, where they kind of, you know, cut you until you, you know, expire. But it took a long time, and it's pretty agonizing.
Wow. Would you die from bleeding out or from sepsis? Or both?
Yeah, I don't think you'd be around long enough to experience sepsis, but, you know, it was
terrible.
Over hours and perhaps days. You know, you could lose a lot of blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyhow, Carol writes, "Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Like many of your followers, I'm sure I take multiple supplements that you recommend, spreading these out following each meal and at bedtime. Like for magnesium and GABA, I take it bedtime.
Okay.
In Layla's most recent podcast on vitamin D, she emphasized the importance of also taking vitamin K. If you take vitamin D, and this made me wonder, do I have to take them both at the same time? Or is it all right to take them at different times of the day? And are there other supplements that should be taken at the same time or taken apart? For example, I heard that taking calcium and magnesium should not be taken together. Wow, that's an old one.
Yeah.
Calcium. You actually need the magnesium with the calcium to take it. Anyway.
I mean, just to comment on that, this is something that came up for me in the 1990s. This was a prevailing view. And they actually did a study where they radio-labeled the calcium and they administered it with magnesium to see if there was some interference. And indeed, there was. But it was a small percentage interference. So you might lose up to 10% of your calcium by combining it with the magnesium because there was some what's called competitive inhibition. It's a little bit like when, you know, two cars try to get into a narrow driveway at the same time, and you know, one has to yield to the other to get through a narrow passage. And so, yeah, competitive inhibition, but only on a level of 10%. So with the amount you're taking, when you're taking a CalMag, it's not like you're completely neutralizing one or the other.
Yes. And as is the case for vitamins D, there are formulations like we have on Fullscript where you take the D with the K together.
Yes.
Or you could take them separately. But Carol, you don't have to take them at the same time after the same meal.
Yeah.
You could take it one at breakfast, the other at dinner. It doesn't really matter that much.
I think people should lighten up a little bit about these things where, you know, take this at this time and that time and the other. It's like, you know, the main thing is just to get them in. You know, to get them in.
Get them in. Exactly. Now, on another note, Carol, I would say there are certain supplements that can be very energizing that you may not want to take later in the day. Mm-hmm. These might be some B-complex vitamins or B12. It may be CoQ10. For many people, it kind of buzzes them a little bit. CoQ10 or ubiquinol.
Yeah. Sensitive
maybe
people.
DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Things like that, where you may find that it may be a little too energizing, even EGCG.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe EGCG you want to take earlier in the day rather than later.
It's decaffeinated, it should be decaffeinated. There's not much
caffeine. It should be decaffeinated. Yeah. So that would be something. But yeah, that would be the way. You don't have to be too concerned about taking D with K at the same time. And, you know, also remember that you are getting K2 from, you know, if you take any natto or if you eat any dairy like cheese, or if you eat meat, you're getting vitamin K.
Right. It was actually
That's one of the reasons
why there was such a thing as the Dutch paradox is the Dutch eat a lot of aged cheese. And that's actually a lot of the original vitamin K2 research comes out of the Netherlands, where they studied the Dutch population. And they said, what's the secret sauce, you know, like the French paradox with resveratrol, they thought it might be vitamin K2 from cheese that exerted a protective, you know, cheese ultimately a very high saturated fat and cholesterol food.
And weren't they one of the 22 countries that were nixed out of Ansel Keys's original study when he developed the cholesterol hypothesis? Because it came down to 7 countries instead of the 22 he looked at.
Cherry
and
picking.
And he looked at the population of the Netherlands and said, it's a very fatty diet, but they don't seem to have a lot of heart disease. So
cherry
they're
picking.
Out.
Yeah. You know, cherry picking the data. That's one of the ways that
and
you
also
can...
the Swiss. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Who eat a lot of cheese. Swiss cheese.
Right.
I think we have a question about some test result interpretation, do we? Because I wanted to make a point about that.
Let's see here. Let's see. Oh, was it the liver enzyme one?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Let's see here. This comes from Lydia. I'm a 64-year-old female. I've been diagnosed with blood pressure, osteoporosis. I took the vaccines for hepatitis A and B in 2008. It showed then that I had a high ALT, AST. But then when I went to a liver specialist...
The fact that she took the vaccines and that she had a high liver function test, it doesn't mean anything. Unless she tested positive for hepatitis. So the vaccines do not cause liver enzyme elevation.
And she had those back in 2008.
It doesn't matter.
And it was the beginning of 2024. She showed high AST, ALT, and high SMA, smooth muscle antibody.
Okay.
Well, a liver specialist ordered a fiber scan of the liver.
Okay, let me explain what that is. A fiber scan. So there are The best way to look at the liver is with an ultrasound. I mean, you can do a CAT scan or an MRI, but an ultrasound is very good for looking at what's called fatty liver or cirrhosis or potentially a tumor or looking for gallstones. But an even better test and a more subtle test is what's called a FibroScan. And the FibroScan looks at whether there is the beginnings of fatty liver or fibrosis or liver damage. Fibrosis is a precursor to cirrhosis, which is destruction of the liver, but fibrosis precedes it. And a FibroScan is a very sensitive test for determining the likelihood that there's some kind of problem with the liver. So anyway, can I back up a little bit? She had a slightly elevated liver function test, and then she had, you know, she went to a liver specialist who is going to do, he's going to do the search for potential causes. He's going to look for an infection. Well, no, she doesn't have hep C, doesn't have hep A or B. Okay, fine. Could she have autoimmune liver disease? That's what the smooth muscle antibody test is for.
Right. Yeah.
So that test was positive, but here's the thing. You have to be a skilled interpreter of these tests. And so a layperson might say, oh my God, look it up. Oh, that is a test that indicates that I've got autoimmune liver disease or something else. And an expert can interpret these tests and say, render a verdict, which you'll share with our listeners now. What did the doctor say?
Yeah, the liver specialist said, even though the SMA was so high, repeatedly high, said that the SMA test result is nonspecific and that I should ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a guy who's seen a lot of stuff. And sometimes people have antibodies which suggest something autoimmune, but at a low level and without any evidence of liver damage. And maybe this is a precursor to something. Maybe this person deserves follow-up examinations, or maybe this is a cautionary tale. You know, be careful. Don't drink a lot of alcohol. Don't consume a lot of toxic food. But
don't take any acetaminophen.
Don't take a lot of things that can have a harmful effect on the liver. But I've got an article here that really kind of addresses this, and that's why I wanted to look at this. We often get these kind of questions like, I have this, or, you know, I looked at my test results and I have like an elevated RDW on my CBC, or I have a whatever, you know, something like my platelets are a little bit in the low range or something like that. And this is what the article says. People find medical test results hard to understand, increasing overall worry. Mm. So the study showed that a lot of people, they looked at over 2,000 adults, age 55 to 84, and participants were provided with a hypothetical scenario in which they were seeking care due to troubling urinary symptoms, okay? And the participants saw different reports, and the net result was that 93% of those who received a patient-centered pathology report accurately identified the report showed prostate cancer, okay? So this is in the case of, like, men with potential for prostate cancer, but actually, a lot of these tests are hard to interpret, and the language that is sometimes given on, you know, MRIs, that, you know, you look at the interpretation, it's very worrisome. Or you look at blood tests and something is in the high or low range. And, you know, I'm all for empowering patients, but, you know, if I get, you know, some kind of legal document, I'm going to call an attorney. I'll call, you know, a buddy and say, hey, what does this mean? Because I can look it up on the internet, but I might, you know, he who hath himself for a doctor hath a fool for a doctor. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is an example of, you know, I will defer to the liver specialist. The liver specialist thinks that there's nothing of an emergency nature here, and perhaps we'll suggest a follow-up with a subsequent blood test to see if this is stable. But you essentially got, what had triggered this was a slight elevation in your liver function test, which should be followed up. But there's a myriad of reasons for this. I recently had a slight elevation in my liver function test. I'd never had one before, but then I realized I'd worked out really hard the day before. My muscles were really sore. And when I subsequently repeated it, it was normal. Muscle soreness can release things that mimic liver enzymes. And so, you can't hang your hat on a single test result, and you have to have it interpreted and put it in context.
Yeah. So, there we go. Okay. All right. Well, Lydia, thank you for that. And, her ALT and AST are normal. It was just that SMA, the autoimmune thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that still stays high. And if her liver specialist said, okay, yeah,
fine. No biggie.
Yep.
Biggie. There you go. Thank you, Lydia. A reminder to all of you to email for questions to Q&A with Layla is questions@drhoffman.net. That is questions@drhoffman.net.
Okay, and we look forward to being with you in 2025. So listen to all our great content at drhoffman.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mutin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.